Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is an episode recapping the origin story of 343 itself. Usually, I don't like talking about ourselves, our accomplishments, actually our products and services beyond the brief little ads I do on the podcast. If you go on my X channel, you'll rarely, if ever, see me pimping our stuff. Same thing with on the Instagram side, same thing with the YouTube side. But, you know, it wasn't a few weeks back. I have the email open right now. It was January 7th. I received an email from a listener, a coach, a member of the coaching program. And let me read it for you really quickly. It says, "Hey, brother, listening to the podcast, and I thought a good topic for an episode would be a sort of origin story and a behind the scenes of how 343 began. Also, another episode idea is I'd love to know what the brainchild was for the actual foundational training activities that make up the 343 curriculum. Was it from Argentina? Was it from a trip to Spain or watching Barcelona? Or, like most, was it just a mix of all methodologies across all countries? Just my two cents." So I'll keep the author obviously anonymized because I'm not sure if he wants his name out there or not. You know, and I kind of responded in kind, saying that I find it kind of icky when people talk about themselves and their achievements. So that's usually why we don't do it. Benny thought it would be a good idea since we have a whole bunch of new listeners in the past 6 months. The podcast has, you know, grown considerably, and maybe they don't know. They haven't been around since 2009 when we first started, or 2012 with the infamous video, or 2013-14 when we launched our first ever coaching education product, and I obliged. So this episode is all about our origin story. I personally enjoy listening to other people's origin stories for whatever reason. I hope you'll enjoy it as well. So with that, quick little ad of where to go with respect to coaching education. You want to go to 343coaching.com. And for coaches out there, we have free and premium programs for you to utilize, leverage, and as the cliche goes, level up. But this is quite different than everything else that's out in the market. We've actually been there and done that and aren't regurgitating or synthesizing other people's work. It's our work, our stuff that we've accomplished here in the American soccer landscape, which is quite unique with respect to other countries. So that's for coaches. 343coaching.com. For parents, we started a brand new program specifically designed for you guys because you have kids. You want to know how to best mentor them, how to best guide them through the landscape that is American soccer. It's a treacherous one at that. So we've encapsulated all of our historical knowledge, experience, and wisdom into a program for you. And you can find that at 343masterclass.com. And finally, for the little ones, if you're coaching 7 versus 7, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, here we go. In we go with Benny Rogers on the origin story of 343. So talk to me, Benny, because I have no idea what we're going to talk about this time.
Well, we recently got an email from, what was his name? I think you know which one I'm talking about, from Joe. And I think he brings up a good point in that there's a lot of new followers of 343 and some new members, and maybe they don't know the origin story of 343 and how this all came to be. You know, how you're sitting here today on this platform with this, I would say, massive following. I think there's tens of thousands of people that listen to you and tune in and care about what you have to say in the American soccer landscape. So I think today would be good, Gary, if we can kind of walk through the origin story in extreme detail. I think everybody wants to know. Even though I've heard the story myself from you 100 times, I think every time I hear it, you know, something else pops up and there's good information.
Yeah, there's always new stuff for sure. And I responded to Joe's email kind of saying, yeah, you know, but I'm always really hesitant about talking about ourselves, you know, and what it is that we've done and our story and this and that. But I know there's folks out there who might be new, and even folks who aren't new who would like to hear. I know that when I listen to podcasts, it's really cool when I listen to people's origin stories too. I don't know if, is that the same for you, Ben, or no?
Definitely.
Like, it's kind of intriguing. But you said that we have a large following on that stuff. Yeah, like on the podcast, but we need to get the YouTube numbers up.
Right.
So, gosh, where do we even start, Benny? Do I start when I was born? When do I start, dude? That's always the issue. I guess the starting point is brief soccer background first. So, born in the United States, raised in the United States, son of Argentine parents. Grandparents are also Argentine. Great-grandparents are Argentine as well, but some immigrated from Italy and Germany. So that's kind of like the heritage there. All that to say also that kind of soccer is in the heritage. You know, obviously, if you're the son of Argentinian parents or you're an Argentinian, soccer is part of your story one way or the other. Even if you didn't play soccer, even if you don't watch soccer, it's because you probably rebelled hard against your parents or something. So there's that. I have a brother, younger brother. We played soccer our entire lives since we were 3 years of age. I think one of my earliest memories as a human, period, is me putting on some tan soccer socks because I had a game that weekend. AYSO, whatever three-year-olds were doing. I know the old school people in the audience understand that at that age, what it looked like on the field, everybody's kind of swarming like a swarm of bees after the ball. Hilarious. And the goalkeeper just stands on the line and the ball gets kicked and the goalkeeper just watches it go under his legs or something like that. So funny stuff.
What league did you play in, Gary? Like, was it AYSO? Was it?
Yeah, AYSO, man. Back then, especially, there was no club soccer in the sense of what it is today. Club soccer, kind of in the sense of what it is today, started maybe when I was 15 years old or something like that, 16 years old. Which is kind of when I had my first ever season in club soccer. And it was playing for the father of Marcelo Balboa, which you may or may not know, a U.S. men's national team legend, played a whole bunch of World Cups. And the dad was a pretty famous soccer coach there in Cerritos for obvious reasons, you know, that being the most obvious of reasons. So anyway, you know, my brother and I played our whole lives. When I went to college, you know, I didn't get picked up or anything. So I tried to walk on. I did not get picked up after trying to walk on at a Division I school there at Cal State Fullerton. And so that kind of created a really big chip on my shoulder. That was one of my first sort of serious rejections. Almost like in life, the one that really hurt a lot, you know, because throughout my youth playing career, I was pretty good, man. I was always, if not the best player on the team, you know, among the best players on the team. When I went and played club, that kind of degraded already. So I kind of got a reality check already, you know, when I was playing for Balboa there. But I still felt that I was easily good enough to be selected, and I wasn't. So that was a big bucket of ice water in the face, right? The other thing that probably created a chip in my shoulder is with respect to when I tried to walk on. I was 17 years old, went to college a little bit early, and I was not developed physically at all, okay? So if you look at my driver's license, then I was 5'7". I don't know how much I weighed, but I was a skinny little peon. And then I finally developed like a year later when I was 18, 19 years of age, which was it's kind of rare. And I became a 6'3", 175-pound guy, right? And then, you know, playing intramural there, then the staff there of the university wanted me to come to the team. And I kind of said, fuck you at that point. A regret of mine, if I'm being sincere. It was pride, right? Ego from that initial rejection. So that's kind of like the playing history. I decided to dedicate myself to academics. I studied physics and mathematics. After I graduated, I went to work for Boeing Satellite Systems there by LAX, by the airport, analyzing, designing spacecraft communication systems. And then, you know, while I was there, I decided to do my master's in physics as well. And then as a third thing, I took on my first ever head coaching job while I was doing my master's and while working full time at Boeing. I became the varsity head coach at age 24 or something like that at Pioneer High School, which was a disastrous campaign. I always try to protect myself a little bit because I get made fun of that. The season prior, the team went like 0-10 in league. And then I went like 1-9 in league. So at least I got a victory, but it was really bad, Benny. I'm not shy about it. I admit it. I didn't know anything. I didn't have any formal training in my youth growing up. So imagine what my training sessions looked like at the high school level. It was pure pickup soccer, doing physical sort of things, you know, running laps or not lifting, all body weight sort of exercises as well, but super informal. I was just making it up as I was going along, Ben. There was no rondos or building out of the back or attacking patterns or that stuff was non-existent in my mind, okay, at age 24. So after one season there, I said, coaching is not for me. I'm out, and dedicated myself to, you know, to science, to the career, to engineering. Maybe it was, I don't know how long of a time went by. Maybe it was a handful of years, 5, 6, 7 years. I don't know, Ben. I can't pinpoint it. I have to look up emails and stuff. Brian started coaching. And
what was that first team that Brian coached? Because I know it wasn't Reach.
Yeah, that first team, he obviously will tell the story better than I can. I think it was a U18 or U19 team that Andrew was coaching, but Andrew had to move on to something else. And Brian kind of played a little bit for that team, if I'm not mistaken, but he kind of aged out. And I think the parents kind of asked him, hey, you know, you're always kind of like the commander, the general on the field. Why don't you just take over the coaching responsibilities? Something like this. My memory, don't take my word for it. But he took over that U19 team at that point. He was a very, very young coach. And it did okay. And then obviously after one season, that team already aged out. They were U19. And that's when he picked up the OSC Rage team that became quite famous here in Southern California and even nationally speaking. And nobody in our audience really even knows about that team, because back then records weren't really kept like they are now. There was no MLS involvement in youth. There was no U.S. Soccer Development Academy, did not exist at all. So I'm talking, gosh, maybe 2003 timeframe, 2004 timeframe, something like that. And so, yeah, he took that team at the very lowest levels of club. And this is the part that people might be aware of, at the very lowest levels of club. And back then there was promotion relegation here in Southern California at a league called Coast Soccer League. Promotion relegation, and the Coast Soccer League was considered by everybody in the country as the best league in the country. Because whoever the champion or the top tier teams were in the Coast Soccer League would almost always, if not always, win the national championship. Period. End of story. Like undisputed. Oh, we're playing against Real SoCal. We're screwed. You know, if you're from Idaho, if you're from New York or Florida or the Carolinas, you were not beating the Southern California teams. No chance. We were completely dominant. So back to Brian's team. He started at the lowest rung of the promotion relegation schema. It was called bronze back then. And the tiers were bronze, silver, silver elite, gold, and then the coveted Premier League. Okay. And in the Premier League, there was only 10 teams, you know, so it was a pyramid. Literally, there were thousands of teams and it all funneled up to the Premier League, which only had 10 teams or something thereof per age group in the Premier League. So Brian took a team, I think it was U13, Ben, don't remember? I think it was U13. And every single year he won the league. And so every single year he got promoted to the next higher level on the pyramid, culminating in the final year when they were going to age out, they were in the Premier League, okay? And they did not win the Premier League. I think they came mid-table or something like that. But they did end up winning a national championship with that team. So that's kind of the origin story there with Brian. And how I'm connected is that when Brian first started coaching that bronze low level team, I think he reached out to me at some point. He's like, hey, Gary, come out, check out a game. You know, the kids are pretty good. And I'm like, all right, I'll just go check it out. Like reluctantly. And then I went, and you know how Brian's teams play. Building out of the back, possession, controlling the entire game, orchestrating attacks. And that's what I witnessed. And these were like, I don't know, 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds or something like that. I'm like, what the hell? This is crazy. And that hooked me, Benny. That hooked me. And from kind of that game forward, I kept attending more games. And that kind of evolved into me maybe showing up to training sessions once in a while, you know, and then that evolved into me maybe starting to lay out some cones and helping him, you know, being a little bit of an assistant there. And, you know, that kind of grew and grew and grew to the point where I'm like, I was there all the time, Benny, at that point, even at times traveling with the team out of state and things. So that's the original team, Ben. I don't know if you want to interject there.
I was just going to say, I always remember you, like, sometimes just in the shadows with your three-quarter sweatpants, smoking a cig, watching the session from afar. Because I would always go and watch the trainings. And my brother was on that team, and I would see you there. And, you know, sometimes you pull players aside and give them comments and stuff like that. You know, so I could tell that you were kind of invested in that team. Maybe for the audience, so actually, I was talking with Prieto about this yesterday. Is that, like, a lot of teams in youth soccer these days, they just get guest players to, like, win the league. But I feel like Brian had a core of, like, 7 or 8 players, like, from the start that stayed with him. And then, obviously, yes, he did recruit some other players to the team, but that core group of players, like, continued to develop and develop and just get better and better and better. Versus, like, every year just, okay, Brian got just promoted to gold. Let me wipe the team clean and bring in the next crop of players. But it wasn't like that.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point. It's a very good point. Yeah, it was a core of maybe 6, 7 players who stayed through the entire process. And I think your older brother was one of those players who was on the original bronze team. Maybe, I don't know, Ben. Maybe he started when he was silver or something like that. Or maybe he was on the bronze team. Maybe, do you know that or no? If he was from the very beginning?
I remember him being at, like, the first practice session ever where John Esham was there and, you know.
Got it. So 6 or 7 core guys who went through the entire process culminating in a national title. So imagine, and this is what gives us, or me, I should say, started giving me a lot of confidence in our mental model of how things are in this country. Because imagine those same players who were at the very lowest level in youth soccer at age 12 or 13, and they weren't stuck there. You know, they grew into not only a national champion, but ended up getting full ride scholarships to Division I soccer programs, which back then was the ultimate thing. Like, right now, who gives a show? Oh, Division I scholarship. Who gives a fuck if you actually want to be, like, a professional soccer player? Nobody gives a rat's ass that you got a D1 college scholarship if you want to be a pro soccer player. That's not the pathway at all. That is for second and third tier sort of players today. But back then, that was the shit, you know? So imagine these 12, 13-year-old kids who are at the very lowest of levels ended up getting full rides to top D1 programs. But yeah, to wrap up this story a bit, yeah, every season, you know, you get to know the landscape. You get to know who are great players out there at the different levels. This is another thing that goes very untold about the story, which is Brian, and you mentioned John Esham, which, by the way, would be awesome if we got John Esham on the show. John Esham was his primary assistant, older gentleman who also kind of coached Brian and involved throughout the entire process. He was a former high-level wrestler, so he knew a lot about athletics. He wasn't a soccer player, but he knew about excellence and being merit-based and all of the stuff that we always talked about. They would scout all day, every day, Ben. All day, every day. It wasn't just, oh, let me just show up to my training, lay out cones, and then show up to the games and then call it a day. No, it's all freaking day long at the fields before your actual game and then after the actual game, scouting and watching and studying. So that's kind of the backstory as to Brian and John's recruiting efforts. So that every year when they got promoted, they already knew kind of like their recruiting targets and who to go and try to court and bring them board. And that process started before getting promoted. So yeah, every year it's, you know, 4 new recruits, let's say, that would strengthen the team. And yes, part of the story is that, well, there had to be room had to be made for those 4 new recruits. And so 4 players or 5 or 3 or whatever it was would leave after every season. They would either leave just on their own, because they weren't getting the playing time that they wanted to get, or, you know, they were basically told it's better for you to go play minutes and, you know, let us try and facilitate you finding a new home where you will play a lot and be happy. Right. So it wasn't just some heartless, cutthroat sort of thing like, oh, you're cut. See you later. You know, No, it was a warm sort of conversation. Sometimes positive, but sometimes you know how it is. Things are emotional. It's parents, kids. Sometimes it was hard. It was hard. Yeah, I'll stop there, Ben. That's the story of OSC Rage. I, to this day, still tell Brian, tell everybody that that is his best ever work. I think it's something else that is completely unprecedented or has been unprecedented here in the country.
Yeah. And just really quickly, I mean, he went on to have success with the girls team at that same club. He started at 96 age group, which is my team. So I had the fortune of playing for Brian for 3 years, which was a life-changing experience. But still at this time, Gary, 343 wasn't really born yet, right? It wasn't until the move to TFA. So how did Brian come into, you know, contact with Paul Walker and that whole movement of moving to TFA?
Well, first, when this team that we just talked about aged out, very, very sad day. Tears in everybody's eyes, you know, it's like, and then from a coaching perspective, from the staff's perspective, it was kind of like it's over. Like, what do we do now? Like all of this work for years, you know, and cool, there's a happy ending there with players moving on to play college and all of that and the relationships that were formed and stuff. But like, what do you do from a soccer perspective now? We knew what it took to achieve this. What, we're going to go and do all of that all over again? Like, Jesus Christ, what a disaster. Like, fuck this. And I don't know exactly how it happened that Brian inherited his next team of U10s. Okay, 9-year-old kid. But what I will tell you is that throughout this OSC Rage team, this process, we crossed paths many times with the founder and president of a youth soccer club here in Southern California that was named after Barcelona. It was literally FC Barcelona. And they would always play in the Premier League. They were one of the best teams in the entire country every year, all year. And we crossed paths with him many times. We admired that team. We admired how they played because they actually tried. They didn't know how, but they actually kind of tried to play good soccer. And I think a lot of it had to do also with the demographic of the players on the FC Barcelona club teams here in SoCal. And the demographic was Latino, by and far. Okay. If you saw a white kid on those teams, it was like, oh, that there's the white kid on the team. You know what I mean? It was one of those sorts of things. And so I don't know how it happened. That's a story Brian needs to tell you. But you know, one day he's like, hey, Gary, I guess I'm going to start coaching these 9-year-olds. It was like a sad thing, right? It's like we just came from fucking coaching 17, 18-year-old young men to 9-year-old kids. And I think the story kind of repeated itself where I wouldn't go. And then one day he's like, hey, Gary, dude, these kids are outrageous. They're the best footballers I've ever had. Like, it's incredible. And I'm like, what the fuck are you even talking about? You're telling me the stupidest thing ever. So I show up to one of these games to watch U10 soccer. Okay. Bunch of 9-year-olds running around. Imagine what I thought I would be seeing. And no, dude, playing out of the back, offensive patterns, combination play all over the place, 10 pass sequences, you know, dribbling through two or three guys, megging people, you know, kicking the ball off an opponent to get a corner kick. Like, at 9 years of age, Benny, and I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm like, what is happening here? And so, yeah, that is kind of the origin story of the famous team, of the viral video on YouTube. Our first ever video that we published on YouTube was of that team, maybe like a year later from what I just told you, Ben, because the team was U11 when I filmed that video.
Well, really quick, Gary, like in talking about filming, I feel like you were kind of a pioneer in like the high tower camera. Like now companies have come in, Veo, Trace, and it's all high tech. But back in the day, you had a sick setup. It was like a mean ass tripod with a digital camera at the top and you'd be moving it around. Yeah. And not a lot of people were doing that at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that happened maybe, like I said, a year after Brian started with these U10s, because I couldn't believe my eyes. And I'm like, We need to record this stuff somehow, some way, and take things to even a higher level. And so I got one of those HiPod setups, which back then, nobody in soccer was using those things. That was being used by American football And that's why that business was built. The HiPod business is for American football, so they can film their training sessions, film the games, all that sort of stuff, run the plays. So I kind of broke the piggy bank and dropped whatever it was, like 7K or 8K. I don't even remember, Ben, on one of these systems. And I remember I went with Brian. It was like late night in LA, sketchy little warehouse place. And I went with cash, right? Imagine 7K in cash. And I'm like, okay, well, here we go. I guess I'm doing this. And I couldn't believe I was dropping $7,000 on my camera system.
That's a lot of money back then.
Bro, 7K is 7K, man. And so, yeah, I bought one of those things. I wheeled it out. I learned how to use it. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to film a game now. And I filmed the game. And the video that got published is one of the first videos that ever got filmed, period. So it wasn't some amazing production, you know, to make it go viral. No, it was raw footage of these insane 10, 11-year-old kids doing things that have never been seen before in the country, especially at that age, but even at almost any age, Benny. Yeah, and the video went viral, Ben. Over 1 million views. English papers picked it up. Spanish papers picked it up. Some of the headlines overseas were, oh, looks like the Americans finally learned how to play football. No, literally, those were the headlines. And so that kicked off a flurry of emails and messages and comments asking us, how are you guys doing this? Teach us, this sort of thing. So that's kind of like the origin story also of the business that is 343. But before then, I had started a blog in 2009 writing about soccer. And, you know, it's getting some traction. It was getting an audience. But yeah, from a soccer perspective, Benny, I'm not shy in saying, you know, we were among the first to start like a soccer blog, independent soccer media outlet. And we were among the first to use the HiPod system in youth soccer training, development, whatever it is that you want to call it. So a lot of firsts there. But yeah, I'll pause at that point.
You said you started the blog in 2009, right? So you already had the name. Why did you decide to call it 343?
No idea. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I had started another online business prior to that. This is not my first rodeo, Benny. And so much time was spent on like thinking about the name and thinking about the domain name and thinking about logos and stupid shit like that. And you eventually learn that all that stuff is retarded. Just fucking produce something good that people want. End of story. You can call it poopooonthestreets.com. And if it's amazing stuff, they're going to go. So I was just thinking maybe of soccer formations one day. And I know 442 was an old school magazine or something. And then I thought, oh, what about 343? And I don't know, for some reason, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll do this. And it kind of fits the motto of the brand as well, because 343 is known to be a highly aggressive attacking system of play. And that's kind of not only representative of what we are on the field, but what I personally am off the field as well, is direct. Let's go, let's go, let's go. No sugarcoating, no pussyfooting around. Fucking, let's fucking fix this shit. If the establishment sucks my balls, then they suck my balls and I'm going to call a spade a spade.
Yeah, wasn't it also Bielsa who kind of made that formation popular and you brought it to the scene, kind of? Am I correct in that or no?
Yeah, well, he's done a lot of things like 3-1-3-3 or something like insanely aggressive. You are right about that. You know, just have three center backs, everybody else an attacking player, basically, and go completely vertical. I mean, I don't want to say he's the first, but he is definitely by and far, if not the, among the most aggressive managers ever.
Yeah. So Gary, at that point, you know, the video becomes viral, 1 million views. Was it at that point that you realized like, okay, you know, maybe we have something here in terms of a business, in terms of creating a coaching course, right? Was it that video that got that attention, that where it's like, all right, we have something here that the people want to see?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that, like I said, hundreds of messages came my way saying, teach us how to do what it is that you guys are doing out there. And I say no, also because when I was getting those messages, I just thought to myself, there's no way that I can teach you this. It's impossible. I can't transplant Brian's brain into your brain and have you execute. And I also I also knew back then that, I mean, you've seen coaching education stuff in the past, okay, in a variety of formats. If it's online, you've seen diagrams with X's and O's and dotted lines here and arrows there, and this is how you run an activity. Or you might even have seen a video of an activity being run by a pro, by pros or something like that. And I know all that stuff is bullshit. I know all that stuff is nonsense. I know all that stuff is not going to teach you how to be successful. And it is certainly not a holistic methodology, an entire methodology packaged into a good delivery mechanism. So that's part of the no answer that I just gave you, which is like, I didn't really think there was anything there. I can't teach you this stuff. It's either in you or it's not in you, sort of thing was the idea. But then, you know, putting two and two together, I'm like, well, I do have this camera system. And maybe if I learn a little bit about audio and mic Brian up during training sessions, I wonder what that'll look like. You know, elevate a training session from above properly, mic him up, sync the video with the audio. And all of a sudden, I'm putting you, the coach who wants to learn, inside of Brian's training sessions. And so not only do you, I mean, that's completely different, right? You don't, I don't know if I want to call it pioneer, but it certainly did not exist here in the country in any high quality sense or in a holistic methodological sense. So I took a look at the video. I added to one of them. I'm like, hey, you know what? This could actually work because you got to hear Brian actually giving the pre-exercise instructions. You get to actually see the exercise being executed while Brian is giving instructions on the sideline. You get to see Brian stop it when the exercise is not going how it should be going and him giving corrective action on the exercise. And the other thing that is absolutely critical and essential is that you're actually getting to see Brian and the players in their actual training environment. So in other words, you are not calling some players on the phone and saying, hey, come over to the field. We're going to film a session, you know what I'm saying? And orchestrate sort of a video session, if you get what I'm saying, Benny, where the players know, oh, we're doing this for training materials. And the coach is saying, oh, we're doing this for training materials. No, you get to see the actual guy and the actual players in the actual training environment, organic training environment, executing all of this stuff. And so I said, you know what? Okay, I guess I'll film a whole bunch of these activities, but I don't want to just slap them together and throw them out there. No, it needs, there's a method to all this madness. There's a methodology. What is this activity actually for? How does it fit into the actual broader picture of team development and of player development? And so what are the rondos for? What is this particular rondo for? Here's building out of the back. How do we build out of the back? What are the exercises that we use to train building out of the back? Why are these the exercises? How do you run the exercises? And then how do we graduate into the middle of the field, right? And then how do we graduate into the attacking side of the field? And how do we train the middle of the field? And how do we train the attacking side of the field? And package it together into one entire methodology from A to Z in the actual real environment. So I did all of that. Luckily, by that time, I was already teaching at the university. So I had a number of years of teaching under my belt. And that experience also helps you with the pedagogy side of things. Yeah. And how to actually create a program, create a course, create a series of courses to get the audience or the student from point A to point Z as best as possible. So there you go, Ben.
I'm curious, Gary, two things. One, how long did it take you to develop this? Like, I know you did everything in terms of the coding, putting everything together, writing the lessons. And the other thing is, would you sit down with Brian and talk about this stuff? Or would you kind of just let Brian do his thing in coaching and you would film and then off you went to go and edit and put the lessons together? Or was it more of like a collective effort when you were putting things together?
Nah, he was 100% on the field and I was 100% on this off the field. There was no meeting of the minds of how to put the program together, the online stuff together at all. He was on the field. I was off the field, completely segregated. Insofar as how long it took, that's tough. Maybe 6 months from the beginning. And you got to keep in mind too. So we're talking 2013 at this point. You got to keep in mind that I'm all I'm actually also writing code, right? I'm actually programming, doing web application programming to deliver all this stuff, because unlike today, all this prepackaged way of creating courses and slapping stuff together did not exist. And so just imagine I'm putting that to work. I'm putting the writing to work. I'm doing video editing. I'm doing audio editing. I'm doing marketing, right? Online marketing. I'm responding to comments and questions. And, you know, because people are asking me for help in the meantime also. And I'm trying not to neglect our audience. So it was a lot to take on. No question about it.
Yeah. Within the email that Joe sent us, you know, he was kind of wondering, what was the brainchild of the foundational training activity set that made up 343? Was it, you know, training from Argentina? Was it from Brian's trips to Spain or watching Barcelona? Was it a combination of all those things?
Yeah. Again, a question that Brian can elaborate on, obviously, a lot more than I can. So I'm going to give you the abbreviated, my perspective version. Number one, I think Brian, unlike myself, had the ability to know football, right? So we knew football, but I didn't know how to translate that knowledge onto the field. Okay. Brian knew how to do that, or had an idea of how to do that. And so he invented activities in the very beginning, Benny, of how to get the team to play proper football. He just did it on his own. Okay. No courses, no nothing. And then, you know, that started evolving a little bit, you know, when he would, I think, observe a lot of Bielsa training, Mourinho training, from him going to actual their training sessions. You know, whenever Mourinho would come here during the summers with Inter, Real Madrid, or whoever he was coaching at the time, Chelsea, Brian would go to those sessions and be taking notes and then trying to replicate the activities that Mourinho was doing in the team environment. And the same thing with other pro coaches that he admired, Bielsa obviously being a huge, huge influence in that regard. And then the next step after that, Ben, maybe a couple years later or 3 years later or whatever, was when he joined the youth club here in Southern California, FC Barcelona, which later became known as TFA or Total Football Academy. Again, because, you know, they ran into copyright issues with the actual FC Barcelona, or trademark issues rather. With that U10 team, and through that connection, he went to FC Barcelona, La Masia, for weeks at a time on multiple years, and learned from the youth academy there at FC Barcelona. It's basically like an internship that he did on many occasions. And that's where a lot of the refinement, further refinement, happened with the rondos, with the attacking patterns, with a whole bunch of other activities. And philosophy to boot. So bringing all those experience together, then all of that is infused into the 343 program.
Got it. Tell me, Gary, about the night before you're going to launch this course. What were your expectations? Did you think not that many people were going to sign up, or did you think it was going to be a big success? What were you thinking? And then how did the launch day actually go on day one?
Yeah. Well, first off, I had no idea. I knew that people wanted it. I didn't know how many people, number one. I didn't know what was reasonable to price the program at, because as you can imagine, look at all the work that went into it, Ben. That's one thing. Number two, I had been studying online marketing for quite a number of years at this point. And, you know, I rolled it out how I was taught to roll out an online program. And then, you know, I just programmed the email campaign to go out that morning, the opening of the doors. And I went to a Coco's there. I think the Coco's that closed down, Benny, by Cal State Fullerton. I went to the Coco's there on the corner of the 57 Freeway and Imperial Highway, ordered breakfast, you know, opened up my computer because I was going to teach later in the day anyway. Opened up my computer and, you know, opened up my email client. And then I just started seeing a whole bunch of emails come in, which were basically the email receipts of people becoming members of the program. And I'm like, what? And it was just crazy. It was just a crazy feeling, Ben, that like every other minute, it was a new email. Every other minute for hours, this was happening. And yeah, at the end of the day, I think there was like 200 some odd coaches that signed up on the first day. And I'm like, I just couldn't believe the reception. And then the positive feedback loop started from then, from people who actually became members. And that just built more and more momentum. And that's not to say that there were folks out there who didn't like what I was doing. Folks online, you know, the haters obviously come out every time there's success. We all know this. And some people are saying, oh, what a piece of shit. He should be releasing this for free. You know, oh, another guy, another coach trying to make money off of soccer. Like, you got a lot of those comments too. And I was kind of prepared for it because, again, like I said, I'd been studying a lot of online marketing and I'd become customers of a lot of online products and services, happy customer of a lot of online products and services. But this was 2013, Ben, and people were still back then, there were people who were still hesitant to even put their credit card online, if you can believe it. Okay, they were like, oh, I don't know, should I put my credit card online or not? And so the environment was very different than it is today. The culture is very different than it is today. But couple that with haters, with people who have no appreciation for the time, energy, and effort of others, and that is worth something, and you get negative commentary as well. So it bothers you to a certain extent, but at the same time, you get so much love and positive feedback from people you're actually helping that in the end, that's what you look at.
I think, Gary, not just in terms of people commenting negatively about like you charging and stuff, but a lot of people like disagreed with the methodology, right? Especially in American soccer. You know, why do you think 3-4-3 can kind of be seen as like the enemy of U.S. soccer?
There's a few things in that question. Number one, about disagreeing with the methodology. First and foremost, at this point in time that we've been discussing, nobody was disagreeing with what we were doing. You just couldn't. You would look like an idiot if you said, oh, those guys don't know what they're doing. Like, excuse me, we go to the most prestigious tournaments. First off, we win the league every single year in all our age groups, because Brian was coaching three age groups, okay? It was like U10, U11, U12, and all three of those teams were playing the way that the famous video was playing, was crushing every single opponent in their path, was winning the league every single year undefeated with 180,000 goals a favor and two against, okay? Was going to the most prestigious tournaments in the country and obliterating everybody, playing like the right way, playing like professional footballers. You know what I mean? It wasn't like kick the fast guy up front and just go and run and score goals at all. It was like fucking mini professionals. So nobody back then was saying, oh, those guys don't know what they're doing. The methodology's garbage and nonsense. No. So that aside, generally speaking, culturally speaking, in the broader mainstream, this was when Pep Guardiola was super dominant at FC Barcelona and crushing everybody as well. The English and the Americans, which are basically following to the tune of the English, they didn't like the Spaniards. You know, they didn't like that culture. And so as a consequence of that, they didn't like this possession-based football where you hold possession 70, 80% of the time. Oh, that's so boring. That's so dumb. The Premier League is where it's at. Look how exciting the Premier League is. Because, you know, Ben, in the Premier League, it's just kick it one way, kick it the other way. Kick it one way, kick it the other way. It's back and forth, long ball action at all times. Okay, just direct one way, lose the ball. It's direct right back in your face the other way. And so that's what they find exciting. That's what the English have always found exciting, is just random, crazy chaos happening on the field at all times. And so Pep and Spain came on the scene with this flavor of football, and it was broadly rejected, even though Pep was wiping the floor with the world. And the Americans kind of agreed, because the Americans, they have or had this culture, the mainstream, I'm talking about the mainstream, okay, of, oh, soccer is boring, you know, 90 minutes and you only score a goal or two, or sometimes it's a 0-0 tie, you know, so no, I'm going to watch American football or basketball where they score 200 points a game. That's action-packed. And so that culture is what took over soccer in our country, which became known as MLS and all this stuff. And so that culture spread into American soccer. They wanted action all the time. Back and forth action, you know, none of this possession stuff, slow, methodical, tactical chess matches on the field. They hated that. And so I just wanted to respond to your first comment, Ben, about the methodology being kind of rejected here. It wasn't the 3-4-3 methodology. It was that broader cultural thing that existed. So, okay, that sidetracked me. Ultimately, what was your question? How'd you finish off that question?
About 3-4-3 being the enemy of U.S. soccer.
Oh, right. Okay, so that already creates some friction between us and the mainstream. Because when you say U.S. soccer, it's really U.S. soccer slash MLS. MLS controls U.S. soccer for folks out there who don't really understand that. And that's a whole other rabbit hole. But that mainstream culture that didn't like Spain, didn't like Barcelona, didn't like Spanish soccer, that didn't like South American culture or South American flavor, you know, complaining about Neymar diving, you know, all the time and doing, you know, step overs and tricks that if they didn't amount to a goal or some dangerous thing on goal, then it's like, oh, you're doing all that stuff for nothing. How stupid, doing step overs and rainbows. Like they were opposed to all that. And we were for all of that. We are for Brazilian flavor and style. We were for Argentinian dark arts, long in the tooth sort of thing. You know, we were for Pep Guardiola and Spanish style football. So that put us 180 degrees apart from the established mainstream culture here. And not only on the field, but then off the field, principally me, I would write about this stuff. And so that kind of made me, in certain respects, like a target, public enemy number one, even though on the field, we're the best. And it kind of shows you how the culture supersedes the results on the field many a times. So there's a long story between the friction between me and U.S. soccer slash MLS that goes beyond this. But that is kind of like the origin of why there's friction in the first place. It's because our culture, our way of doing things is not allowed in this country. They don't allow it. And they look for any which way to eliminate you if you think differently than them.
Has there been any moments or, you know, instances where someone or a higher power has tried to like kind of shut down 3-4-3 or...
All the time, Benny. All the time. It has been a relentless, nonstop strangulation. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it would be direct and sometimes it's indirect, but no question about it. You know, they've been trying to suffocate what it is that we've accomplished, what it is that we do and continue to do 24/7, 365, Benny. They want this eliminated.
When you say suffocate, you know, how do they go about that? You know, is it
using
the media as puppets on Twitter and bashing you? Or
yeah, well, I'll give you an example. If you're running a business, one key thing that you need is distribution. Okay. And so we created our own media platform back in 2009, created our own audience, started way back then. And so we had our own distribution channel. So now it's just one channel, right? But business would be a lot better and amplified if multiple channels distributed our work. Okay. So what does that mean? That means that at least historically, the traditional media outlets, if they were to share a business's work or give a thumbs up to a particular business, that helps your business. No question about it. But guess who covers soccer in this country in the mainstream and has large platforms or large audience? The people who suck up and kiss ass and are the puppets of Major League Soccer and U.S. soccer. The people who do their bidding are the ones who are given a platform to speak and write articles and have a prolific or high profile podcast. Those are the main arteries. Okay. And since, you know, 3-4-3 does not align with the establishment, well, guess what? Those media folks don't distribute our work, because if they did, they would also be against or be doing something that is against MLS and US soccer. And so it's quite simple. That is how they try to limit your reach. That's how they try to limit your business. That's how they try to limit your influence. And any ordinary business would just suffocate, wither, and die on the vine. But that's not who we are, Benny. That's not who I am. Like, this is, you can't stop what's in here, and you can't stop the passion. You can't stop the desire, no matter what you do. But make no mistake, they've been trying for the better part of a decade, you know, to squash 343.
Let's see if this episode gets blocked on YouTube, Gary.
No, I don't think it's to that extent. I think if they just, this is their philosophy, if they just control the main arteries of distribution, that's enough. That's enough for them.
Why did you fight so hard, Gary, for all of this? And why do you continue to do it? You know, what drives you? What's the mission of 343?
Yeah. And by the way, one last remark, I knew all this going into it. I knew in 2013 when we launched this thing and it was received very well by the audience and coaches, I knew back then, okay, there are two paths. Either I kind of conform and like, oh, MLS is amazing. US soccer is amazing. Everybody's doing awesome work. Everybody should, you know, if I use the platform that we had back then to also tell our audience and tell the broader ecosystem that the establishment is awesome, it's where it's at, that our business would have a certain trajectory. And that if I didn't do that, our business would have another trajectory. I knew, Ben, and it was a conscious decision that I just gave up 10 or 100 times the audience, 10 or 100 times the business to be myself and be authentic. I couldn't live with it, Benny. I'd be a liar. And it's one thing to lie externally, but it's another thing to look at yourself in the mirror and say, and look at yourself as a human. You're like, I am a fraud. I am a liar. And for what? For what? Oh, so I can have more attention online. So I could have more money, a number in the bank account. So I can have this kind of a house versus this kind of a house. So I can have this kind of car. Is it that kind of car? I just can't do it, Ben. I can't do it. Now, if people are good to me, if people are good to us, are acting good faith and are real, then I will reciprocate, Ben. So it's not that I'm against people in the MLS or US soccer or necessarily the institution itself. Well, that's kind of not true. But look, if they were good to me, I'd be good to them. But they're just not good people in many regards. And it's because of the way that they're incentivized. They can't be and do good. They have to be and do what I consider very bad things so that they can have a job and so that they can feed their families. So I try to give them that benefit of the doubt, because it's too tough a pill to swallow for me to believe that the humans themselves are gross and dark inside. You know, I just feel maybe I want to believe that they're just cornered into being the way that they are.
What is next for 343, Gary, in terms of education, outreach, innovation? What do you see in the works?
My number one project is to have you take over my job, and then I can actually move on to developing brand new products and services and being innovative. It's just, you know this, Ben, it's just way too difficult to do new stuff and to do it right with all these other responsibilities that I've got. You know, the 343 coaching responsibility, the 343 masterclass responsibility, the 7v7 stuff, which obviously John is the focal point there, but you know, it needs my involvement and attention as well. And all the other things that are kind of not 343, but require time, energy, and effort. So that is my number one project, Benny, is for you to take over.
Again, maybe a part two of this could be, you know, your experience, you know, as an agent. Because I think you can offer a lot of good insight as to, you know, how it works and, you know, the behind the scenes of all that. Because I think people have this glamorous idea of what it is to be an agent, and, you know, they see the show Ballers and you think it's going to fancy dinners all the time and, you know, private jets, but it's not.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that so many folks, well, now everybody's a fire expert online. You know what I mean? They see the crazy, insane fires here in Los Angeles, and everybody online instantly became an expert in fire and how to put out fires and water distribution and reservoirs and budgets and what is a mayor's responsibility and a governor's responsibility? Everybody's an expert again. And the same thing happens with coaching. Everybody's an expert. And the same thing happens with running a club. Everybody's an expert. And the same thing with being an agent or running an agency. Everybody's an expert. You know, now all of a sudden they're, I mean, the laundry list is long. One thing that I'm a big fan of is kind of shutting your mouth until you have like 10 years or the equivalent in time somehow of accumulated experience, expertise, all those sorts of things before you start talking publicly on any sort of subject. And so that has always been my angle. When it came to soccer and coaching, I did not start speaking publicly until there was way more than 10 years, actually, of experience there. In physics, which I have decades of experience, the same with engineering, I still don't even speak publicly because I know that I am, you know, a midwit with respect to legit people in physics and legit people in engineering. So I shut my mouth there, okay? Can I teach you something about math, physics, engineering? Can I do things in those disciplines? Absolutely no question about it, but I'm not going to open my mouth, okay, for the most part. And then you just mentioned the agency stuff, starting an agency, running an agency. You have not seen a single peep from me for the better part of 10 years with respect to that industry, how it works, what are the ins and outs, all of it. And there's a lot to learn and know nothing because I shut my mouth. You feel me? So I won't shut my mouth. I will educate the public. I will tell them how all that machinery, how the sausage is made when the time is right.
Let me know, Gary. Let the audience know. So hopefully down the line, the real story of everything that happened at the Galaxy can come to light too. I'm looking forward to reading your book in 20 years, Gary.
Yeah, man. It's really interesting to know a good amount of things for such a long period of time. And not say them. Not say, I literally just told you that I've been doing physics and engineering for a very long time. Look, here, let me tell you this. I follow a whole bunch of people online who are physicists or mathematicians or engineers. You can just look at Elon Musk for the obvious focal point in today's age. When he talks about technical things on rocketry or technical things in programming or technical things in any domain, energy, batteries, whatever. If you look at the comments, half of the comments are like, this guy's a fraud, doesn't know dick about rockets or rocket science. This guy's a fraud, doesn't know anything about industry, energy and batteries. And what kind of fucking world do we live in, you know? So I think I have enough to deal with the coaching side of the equation. People can wallow in their ignorance a bit longer for all the other things.
Good stuff, brother. I feel like, you know, we covered a lot. I'm sure we missed some things too. You know, we didn't talk about the summit. We didn't talk about how you tried to get the pickup culture going, you know, so future episodes
part two.
For sure.
Yeah, we'll do a part two. Maybe part one is this one. Part two is the next one. I don't know if we should do part two immediately after this part one. Maybe folks in the comments can let us know. And you can also always email me at gary@343.com if you're a little wary about putting your name online. You shouldn't be. You shouldn't be. We should be a little bit more brave to comment online. And if you're anonymous, obviously, then no bravery is required. But I'd be interested if you want us to sequentially do the part two right now or do something else.
Let us know. Part two is coming soon.
All right, Ben. Good stuff.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.